So I want to start with Susan.
Hi.
And hi. I just want to find out, when was the last time you played Belle?
22 years ago, 1996.
Wow, where was that?
Yes, at the Schubert Theater.
Okay.
And then when I left the show, this crazy upstart came in and took over the role of Belle.
It's true.
Yes. Are your ears burning?
Yeah, my ears are burning right now.
So playing Belle after all these years, and then all those years before that, is it kind of like revisiting an old friend?
Yes. And honestly, easier now than it actually would have been 10 years ago. Like, I don't know that I could have done it 10 years ago. I was in such a different place and, you know, playing characters that were edgier and whatever. And I almost feel like I had to become a mom to come full circle and understand and see this whole show from that point of view, do you know? And so it's actually, I thought it would be very hard to play it, and I am astounded with how easy it is, actually.
How does that work, that you have to be a mom to play Belle?
No, I mean, what I understand is I was Belle. I was Belle. I was the new girl in the village called New York City when I was cast. I was the only non-New Yorker, you know. I was that girl, and I would look at Times Square the way Belle looks at the Enchanted Castle. I mean, I didn't really have to act. And then I felt it was very important for me to distance myself from Belle and play edgier characters. And I played Sally Bowles, a heroin addict, for, you know, 2 years on Broadway, and did all these different things in film and television and all this different stuff. And even my animated characters are all very edgy and sarcastic and sexy and all those things. And I just felt like I had to do that to break that image. And now I'm not invested in that anymore. And I'm getting to experience this whole thing coming full circle where great, I did this, I proved that, and now I have license to come back and be that same sort of thing. But I also have the appreciation as a mom now for, as a mom of two little girls. I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old. And how this story speaks to them, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, you don't have to be a mom to play Belle. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying, as a mom, I have another viewpoint that is totally appropriate and wonderful.
Now, coming from a folklore background, that's what I got my master's degree in, I know that fairy tale characters are very one-dimensional. And when this character was turned into film and then musical, it had to be fleshed out. So how do you approach that?
Well, I approach that with a lot of gratitude to Linda Wolverton. She's the screenwriter. She's an Oscar award-winning screenwriter. She, if you were to meet her, you would go, oh, it's
She's
the
Belle.
Real Belle.
She's Belle.
She is Belle. Mm-hmm. She based Gaston on an ex-boyfriend of hers. So, you know, beware, gentlemen out there. Don't make a woman angry.
That's not a cartoon character.
And everything you're speaking to are the arguments and the battles she fought and won. Where even more than the Little Mermaid, who was mischievous, Belle is the next step away from Cinderella, Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty. In that she is dynamic, she is odd and a misfit. Ariel's loved by everybody, even though she's mischievous. Belle is not. She's this voracious reader with an intellect that cannot be satisfied in this provincial town. All of that is Linda Wolverton. And so I just was in immense gratitude to her. And getting to do this in New York, it was fun to talk with her and get the background of where these things came from in her life. And then also take it the next step and ask her the question, like, so Belle traded her life to her father's like 4 hours ago, then she had dinner, be our guest, then she broke all the rules, went in the West Wing, and now she's reneging on the commitment she made earlier today by leaving the castle. I'm not buying it. And so Linda's like, I'm going to write you another scene. And so she wrote a scene that justifies why an intelligent girl who heroically trades her life for her father's has to renege on that. She actually has no choice. And so to have these sort of intellectual conversations with a woman who is responsible for writing this Academy Award, you know, nominated piece was just, like, heaven.
So have there been shadings now since you last played it that you're adding to the characterization?
I think it, undeniably. I think I couldn't help but have that. It's all appropriate and in character. But yes, I'm wiser. I'm smarter than I was. to be honest, it's hard for me to listen to the Broadway cast album because a woman's voice matures at 35, and I was 23 when we recorded it. And, I mean, I can sing loops around what I used to be able to sing. And so I love getting to revisit that. That said, I have been singing it for the last 20 years because every single weekend I'm with another symphony, and I've been singing the music from that whole time. And so I feel like it's more in my voice now than it probably has ever been.
Aside from being the odd person out when you first played Belle, what vivid memories do you have of that experience?
I can't wait to hear what Yvette has to say as well. For me, I was blessed with the most amazing cast. Beth Fowler, Gary Beach, Burke Moses, and Terrence Mann formed who I am as a human being and as an actor and a professional. They were so gracious and so marvelous, and they protected me from things, and they invited me into things. And so much of who I am is because of the example they set, because I could always go to them if I had questions. Gary understood before anybody that this was going to be an enormous hit. You have to understand, Disney had never been on Broadway. We were the laughingstock of New York. Nobody thought it would run. Everybody thought it was a terrible idea. And Gary says, no, no, no. Sit. And people were stressed about it. And he saw me worried about it, too. I mean, it's a weight, this show, like sitting on your, you know, young shoulders. Mm-hmm. And he would just, in the midst of the stress, he would just whisper to me, and I would sit next to him. And then he would take me by the hand, and he would take me outside, and we would look at the 100 people waiting in line at the box office. And he says, don't worry about any of that. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. You are going to be able to do the show as long as you want to do it. And we are just, this show is joy, and we are just going to have an amazing time. And I have been in companies since then, and I know that Yvette has too, that were very toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just the most, like, warmest bathwater experience. It was amazing in every sense. A cliched fairy tale dream come true.
Now, Yvette, you took over for her on Broadway for a little while.
I did.
Then came to LA, right?
I was in the Broadway company, and I came in as understudy to Sarah Uriarte Berry.
Who was my college roommate.
I know, that's so funny. And then she was leaving, and then they said, okay, well, we have a Toronto company opening, we need a new Broadway Belle, and we need an LA Belle to replace Susan, because Susan had gone, Susan, Gary, Beth,
Burke, Terry,
and Burke,
Tom.
And Terry, and Tom, yeah. You all went to LA, and they were like, well, LA, it's our first time there, it's going to be bigger than Broadway, it's got to be... So Carrie Butler got Toronto. Let's see, they brought in, I think, Debbie Gibson to New York because Christian Tisdale was the understudy, and then they brought her up.
Christian went on for a while, mm-hmm. and yes.
And then I got hired for Los Angeles, and I was so happy. I had been on the road with Blood Brothers, and I'd been on the road a lot and with a few things, and I thought, wow, I'm just going to sit in New York for a while and enjoy being an understudy in Beauty and the Beast, and I can have this job for as long as I want it,
yep.
and people are going to be there for years, and I thought, that's great. And then they're like, nope, we'd like you to go to L.A., and I went, okay, I'm going to L.A. now.
Life of the actor.
Yep, there you go. And so I got to trail Susan for a week, so I had to do the whole, like, come see Susan, meet Susan. And because of Susan, I also negotiated my dog into my contract. That was because of
Willa
you.
Was backstage.
Because Willa
yeah,
was there.
My
she,
dog was in the
she
dressing
had
room.
Her dog, Willa.
Willa?
Backstage.
Willa
and I
the
had
Beast.
And I had just gotten a black lab puppy when I got hired in New York, and so she was my dog was about 6 months old, and I said, I'm not leaving her, I can't leave my dog. And the girls in the dressing room said, well, Susan has her dog, so negotiate your dog.
Yeah.
So I did. So I said to my agent, my dog has to come, Susan's got her dog, so get my dog in. So my dog was negotiated into the contract, and she was flown out here, she was allowed to be backstage in the dressing room. So we lost one dog but gained another when you left.
I love it.
And Linda used to come, you know, it's funny because Linda would come visit me as well because it was really important to her to make sure that, you know, the legacy that she started and everything that she had, you know, all the information she'd given to Susan would also be transferred to me. And so I sat there and go, oh my gosh, you're Belle. I was like, I'm sitting here with
she looks
the
like
actual Belle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I felt that from her. And so it was so clear how invested she was because she was Belle, and it gave me so much insight into the role that I don't think we were blessed, because I don't know if anyone else ever got that, to be honest
it's
with you.
It's a very unusual dynamic that you have mm-hmm. today. Yeah. As a director, you get to draw from your own experience mm-hmm. as well as observing Susan doing it. Now, how does one direct the originator of a role, especially
oh my God.
When you've done it yourself?
I don't even...
That, how often does that happen?
First of all, we are playing Belle.
We are. That's
so
what we,
I sit there and I say
it.
To Yvette, I go, Yvette, are we entering on stage right or are we entering on stage left? Yvette, when do we put the book in the basket? And Yvette,
when's his head in our lap? I'm
yeah,
like, okay.
Wait,
so yeah. We've been working. It's really funny because it's felt so collaborative. I've enjoyed every minute of it because it is. You know, you go, oh my gosh, she's gonna have all this stuff still in her mind, and I think of this as our opportunity to rediscover, retell, and then you know reimagine. As well, and I think because we're both coming from it older now, because again, for me too, I haven't played the role since the LA company closed. I never went out into another company. I left her behind as well.
Wow.
I thought, you know, I wanted to move on into other roles and do other things, so I left her behind too. So it's so amazing coming back as an adult because I don't see Belle as a child. I see her as a woman who's been forced to grow up and take care of her father. You know, she's been forced into it. And so as women, I think we understand that sense of responsibility and having to care for somebody else more than we care for ourselves.
I also don't think that I could have done this. Honestly, what sold me on it was the fact that Yvette was directing it. Because Yvette is for me, like, the translator. Like, she understands what we did before, and then she can translate how it's going to function in this case. As opposed to, can you imagine if I was with somebody who had never done it, never seen that production, I would have to spend half my time going, okay, well, before, and then I would feel awful having to say, like, well, we kind of did it this way, and this is why, and, like, I don't have to say any of that. None of it. I literally, she already knows, and so I can just say, like, oh, and I can laugh saying, oh, we're on the opposite side of the stage this time.
I know,
she's
exactly.
Okay, I'm going to reverse this, Susan. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, good, okay.
And the difference is we're justifying because we know... We know what Linda Wolverton and Howard mm-hmm. Ashman wanted. And it's funny because we each have stories. And even the other day, Susan shared a story that still makes me cry about Howard Ashman. And I thought, wow, so we're doing everything that we're doing to keep this story alive and completely in keeping with the legacy that Linda Wolverton and Howard Ashman set up.
Did you know him?
No.
You never did.
So he passed away before the movie had opened.
91, I think.
Yes, and they had just, Alan Menken tells a story, they had just done a screening in New York City where they didn't even have final animation. So there were entire scenes that were just still the black and white sketch drawings, and they didn't have any underscoring yet. And they didn't know how it would play, and it was like, you know, maybe 200 people in this small theater audience testing it, right? And it got a standing ovation. And Alan and Linda went to Howard's hospital room at the end of that screening and just told him all about it. And he passed away 2 days later. But he was so much a part of it. And his partner was at our rehearsals. And his partner's the one who dug up all the old lyrics that didn't make it into the movie. For Human Again, for Gaston, the extra verses of Gaston. He was very much there and knew very much how Howard felt about different elements and was involved in that. But Linda and Alan would tell us stories and, you know, tell us the evolution of this or that. And he definitely felt like a part of it. I was telling Yvette the other day, the melody for the song Home, which was a solo added for Belle in the Broadway production, because Belle, strangely, doesn't have a solo in the movie. She doesn't have her own song like Ariel does. And so they added one, Home. And Alan told me, you know, when he was teaching the song, this used to be a different song called My Old Friend, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that Alan had tried to write for Howard's memorial and just couldn't do it and just thought to himself, it's going to be 30 years before I can write a song about Howard. But literally, within the next year, they had decided to take that property to Broadway as Disney's first show. And when he and Linda were talking, like, we've got to give Belle a song, he said, I'm going to use the melody that I wrote for Howard. And so that was something I would think about every single night. This is Howard. This is an homage to him.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
Is anybody from the original production coming up to see
you?
Oh
my God, they've all tweeted me, and they've all emailed me, and they've all Facebooked me. Stacey Logan, who's Babette, our wig guy who works for Cirque du Soleil in Vegas, he's like, send me the wigs, I'll style them for you, Roger. Not that we need, I mean, we don't need it, we have an amazing wig person, but yeah, I've heard from Burke Moses, like they all sort of come. My musical director, I do a show called Broadway Princess Party in New York. He's totally flying out. Courtney Reed, who's the original Jasmine, she's flying in. Yes, I have people coming in.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
So cool. We have a great cast.
Yeah, we do have an amazing cast.
It's really wonderful. And we have children in the village, which is so exciting.
Okay. It adds such an emotional element. And it's just, I guess, just on Broadway, you can't pay the kids, you have to double cast them, it would be too expensive, but it was always strange. Yvette pointed out, there's something strange in this village, there's no children.
It's a Chitty Bang Bang-esque.
It is.
You know, we're hiding them away.
Are they in a dungeon somewhere?
I think so. So I was like, hey, now we have children.
Oh my gosh, it adds such an amazing, a dynamic quality. And children in the castle. Chip is not the only child in the castle, which also was very odd. Like, it's nice that he has siblings. And
he did in the movie. I mean, you know.
Right, of course.
Go to bed in the cupboard with your brothers and sisters, Chip, you know. I mean, so where were they in the Broadway version?
Nowhere.
But they're back.
It's so good.
In the original fairy tale, there were servants in the castle, but they were invisible.
Yes.
And so they weren't real characters. And
right.
So they had to have extra characters, because otherwise it would just be Beauty and the Beast. That was all that was in the fairy tale, basically. So, how do you work with them? They're really the ultimate sidekicks, the ultimate Disney sidekicks.
You know what? This whole show is about the heart. It's about love. It's about the transforming, you know, the transformative power of love. But they love him, and so they have a humanity, but they're also cartoons. So there's always that fine line. Mm-hmm. Where we have to feel what they feel and understand what they're understanding, you know, and what they're feeling for him. But at the same time, we also laugh with them, you know. So I think we find that great balance of humanity and cartoon. But also, I think of the story as one of the versions that I was reading, where I was thinking that the whole town, the whole village, is under kind of a veil. How does no one ever remember there's a castle up there? You know, so they've all been banished. You know, in Greek drama, the worst punishment was not death, it was banishment. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the whole castle has been punished because they helped make him the way he is. You know, the Beast and I have been talking about his backstory, and yeah, your servants, those who love you, do help form you. And they didn't help you find the best of yourself. But luckily, there is someone who's coming who will help you find the best of who you are, you know, and pretty much in doing so, pretty much save a village, you know. That's the beauty of Belle.
So have you looked at any of the other allegorical references as Belle as a feminist and the mixed race marriage between them, the relationship between them, other things that might relate to modern day society's problems?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the entire point of the story,
mm-hmm.
that she can see in this human Gaston the monster that he is, and that the Beast's outward appearance disappears once she gets to know him and understands how similar they are. My favorite moment in the play is this scene in the library where they connect through a story, through books, as escapism. They're both escaping the tragedies of their own life in books, and in sharing that, that is where a chord is struck, a union is struck between them of similarity. And of course, I mean, that is everything in our, you know, not to make this so important, but I think you do have to delve into the deeper issues of this phenomenal story. There is a reason this movie was nominated for Best Picture, and I think it is the writing, and that we, on the inside, no matter how the outer looks, we all share a similar hopes and dreams and want to be loved and understood and seen and heard. And
we share humanity.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's the unifying element. And, you know, it's funny, there's a village here and everyone's closed off.
Everybody,
no one wants to accept someone that's different. And until... you know, until the end of the play.
You know, I also read that Howard Ashman identified with the Beast. because of AIDS.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about this with the cast the other day. The song Human Again had been cut from the movie because they felt the movie was running too long. It was still very early in this resurrected animated feature department of Disney, and they didn't think kids could sit still that long. And they even understood once we did the play and they reinstated that song, that was probably the most important song in the play. And they reinstated it in the movie and in subsequent DVD releases because it is what Howard was going through. Howard died very early in this onslaught of AIDS, and he was made to feel like a monster, unlovable, untouchable, and he longed to be human again. And the two songs, the mob scene, Kill the Beast, and Human Again, were the two opposite sides of what he wished people would see him like. And then also, we don't like what we don't understand. In fact, it scares us, like this whole mob mentality against gay men who were dying. And people didn't understand why or how, and maybe they deserved it. And, you know, can we touch a doorknob if they've touched the doorknob? And, I mean, he left us with a lot to think about and had, through his art, an ability to sort of speak about what it was like in those early days. And that's very much a part of this.
I've read that Little Shop is your favorite musical. As you draw away from Beauty and the Beast, you think it might be elevated a little bit in your little personal pantheon?
What, Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
No, all I was saying is when I auditioned for Beauty and the Beast, I had to audition for the casting director and the director and the choreographer and the musical director, and I was fine. And then my third day of the call of a 3-day callback was for Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg and all the heads of Disney and like 20 Disney executives, and that was fine. I didn't care about any of those days, and I wasn't nervous about those 2 days because I didn't know who those people were. It was the second day. The second day was singing for Alan Menken, and he had written my favorite musical, which was Little Shop of Horrors. And so that was the day where I walked in the room, and oh my God, there he is, and I have no recollection of what transpired during those 5 minutes, and then I left the room. And then they called me saying, you can come back to the third day. I'm like, awesome. Okay. I have no recollection of what just happened. So, I mean, I have so many favorite musicals now, I couldn't narrow it down to one. But at that age, like, I was obsessed with Little Shop of Horrors. I just thought he was the bomb, and is the bomb, still, Alan Menken. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Oh gosh, you know, it's funny because I after Beauty, I was married, and I have two girls as well. Two girls, yay, bells.
You got to marry
daughters.
Gaston.
I did. I married Gaston,
really?
Yes, from the Los Angeles production.
You didn't learn your lesson.
I did not learn my lesson. And then the last performance of the show, Tom Bosley, it was their last show, and they were dropping rose petals from the ceiling, and Tom Bosley turns to the audience, and he says, I'm so sorry, you have all been cheated. And I'm going, what is he going to tell him? And we had just let the news out that we were eloping to get married, so Ken Werther had just found out.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so Tom goes, and Ken's like, why didn't you tell us sooner? And I was like, well, it's a secret. But anyway, so yeah. So Tom says, you've all been cheated. In our story, Belle does not end up with the Beast. Belle will be marrying Gaston
in about like 2 weeks.
You know? So it's like, oh no! You know, when Gaston
brilliant.
Comes over and dips me and gives me a kiss, and I'm like, oh gosh, children, close your eyes. They're traumatizing
so
children everywhere.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah. And it's funny, yeah, and we ended up with two little girls. So this story, you know, this show has been...
Who are in the cast.
Who are in the cast. My daughters are in the cast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
great.
I have a silly girl and a napkin plate beautiful dancer.
Yeah, a sugar bowl.
Oh, yes, silly girl and sugar bowl.
Yes.
That's right. And then napkin
and then
plate and, yeah.
Beautiful dancer.
So, so it's kind of coming full circle.
Well,
and being able to tell the story.
I could talk to you guys forever about this, but I know you got to get back. But one last question. Will it be hard to say goodbye to Belle?
I've never felt like I was saying goodbye. I've always felt like it's someone else's turn next. I felt like that when Yvette took over. Mm-hmm. I felt like, and I still feel that way. I've seen other productions. I'm always excited when, like, a student of mine is off to play Belle, or, you know, it's, we're all sharing this character. I mean, she's part of our American culture, and I share her with the little girls who wear their yellow dresses from the Disney store. I share her with Paige O'Hara. I share her with Emma Watson.
Does she have a yellow dress?
And I get that everybody gets to share this character. And so I just feel like we're all taking turns. And it's fun for me to get to step back in. And my husband was asking me last night, because it was the first time I'd seen him in a couple weeks, and he's like, is it hard? And I go, I was worried about nothing. Like, I seriously, it's not hard at all. I'm not thinking about age. I'm not thinking about anything. Like, it's just, it is who she is, and the lines are coming right back, and the sentiment's coming right back, and honestly, I think better than what I was before, because I know more. I think I'm better at my craft now. So it's fun, but I've never felt like, I've never been sad at shows closing. I always feel like it's the beginning of the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. That's
great.
Yeah, there's always
just
a
like a
next.
Fairy tale, the next chapter.